Welcome back to Agile for All's Humanizing Work Show. I'm Richard Lawrence.
And I'm Peter Green.
And this time we're digging into the relationship, or maybe conflict, between ease and meaning in work. We started thinking about this and it reminded us of a quote from Eli Goldratt, a big influence in our thinking.
Yeah, I was reading The Choice, which is one of Goldratt's later books. It was a dialogue.
It was his last one.
Yeah, it was a dialogue between, or set up as a dialogue between him and his daughter. And at one point, he asks the question, poses the question, so do you want to have an easy life or a meaningful life? You can't have both, which I think is an interesting concept, right? And I immediately wanted to go ask that question to all my kids.
Did you?
I think, used that quote since then. I didn't make it a point to, but it came up, right, in the context of being a parent. So this idea that ease and meaning are almost polar opposites or on opposite ends of some kind of a spectrum. So I started thinking about, well, what does that mean in the context of humanizing work? Are we trying to make work easy? Are we trying to make work meaningful?
And is easy a problem? Are those actually in conflict with each other?
Right. So that's what we're going to dig into this week. And one way that we could explore that would be to think about times when work was particularly easy for us. Or to test that by saying, have we experienced times when work was both meaningful and easy? Mm-hmm.
It seems to me there's something in the definition of easy here.
Uh-huh.
I think Goldratt may mean something different than we're meaning. So what's an example that comes to mind for you? Let's explore with that.
Interestingly, the first thing that came to mind was not necessarily easy, but when I was in a state of flow. So I'm a musician, I play the trumpet, and one of the things that I love to do is sight read really difficult music on a gig where the stakes are high. So I remember fairly recently getting a call to play in a big band, kind of a jazz orchestra, and all newly composed music, so there was no way to study it up ahead of time. And the composer was fantastic, but wrote really difficult music. It was really difficult, kind of cutting edge, modern jazz stuff.
So you're sight reading in a rehearsal or in a performance?
This was on a gig.
Okay.
This was on a gig. And I love it when the stakes are high. I mean, it's something I pride myself on, is the ability to sight read. The thing I love about it is that in order to perform at kind of that cutting edge of my growth and my capability, I have to be laser focused. I have to be in a state of flow. I can't think about, oh, I just missed the note. I can't think about, huh, the person to the next to me just played something that I didn't understand. I can't think about, why is the audience doing that? I have to be so focused in on where we are right now, and when you're sight reading, you're actually looking 1, 2, 4, 8 measures ahead. And so there's just a lot of mental gymnastics going on. I love doing it, and I love doing it well. And so that it's interesting, because that was not easy. It's not easy to do. But it's something I love doing, and it is meaningful, and I do find that that is the time, or one of the times, when I'm really in a state of flow, where you get to the end of it and say, wow, it's over already?
Yeah, and it's not work, but the first example that came to mind for me is downhill mountain biking, which is my favorite thing to do in the summer when it's not snowy.
Yeah.
And the more difficult the trail, and particularly the more rocky the trail, the more I experience that state of flow.
The stakes are high.
Right, yeah. Crashing's not good.
Uh-huh.
And there's a particular speed where this kicks in, where if you're going too fast, it just feels out of control and panicky, and you probably crash. If you're going too slow, it's not hard enough, and paradoxically, then it doesn't feel easy enough.
Mm.
Right, so I think when we're saying ease, we sometimes mean flow.
Yeah.
Which is different than I didn't have to work very hard.
Yes.
I didn't have to concentrate much.
Yeah.
There's that point, whether it's a difficult musical piece, because I experienced this in music too, or a difficult bike trail where I've reached a point where I have to be fully present and engaged, and it's hard enough that it also becomes easy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It seems to flow.
I'm sure, and I know that like researchers like Csikszentmihalyi, who wrote the book Flow, right? And The Art of Creativity, is that his other book? We'll have to look it up and put it in the notes, right? But Csikszentmihalyi's work was really focused on this concept of flow, and I think that that's one of the things he describes it as, right? So both of these examples are examples of us being in flow, a flow state. And flow, when you're in it, feels easy, but you're doing hard things.
You almost have to be, right? The research shows that you need to be right at the edge of your ability.
Yeah, and then the stakes are high, and the outcome matters, and there's something in our brain that kicks in, a different brainwave pattern, literally, that kicks in, where we are able to just laser focus, and you get done, and you realize, oh, an hour went by. You know, it's a pretty cool state to be in. So I don't think that that's what Goldratt was referring to when he said, you have these two things. Do you want it to be easy? Do you want it to be meaningful? I'm thinking of a recent conversation I had with somebody who has an online business, and she had really optimized it. She'd done a lot of automation of the marketing, and she had narrowed it down to where she works about 4 hours a month now and is making a seven-figure income based on that. And she was kind of complaining that she's bored and she needs to figure something else out to do with her life now. And I think that that might be closer to what Goldratt was referring to when he said, do you want it to be easy like that, or you don't have to exert any effort? I think she was having an impact on the people in her customers. So that may be closer to what Goldratt was referring to by easy.
And there's probably hard work to get to that point.
Quite a bit, yeah.
So if she wanted to skip straight to the 4 hour a month, she wouldn't have had the impact that
right.
she's having.
Mm-hmm.
So she put in some work and may have even experienced some flow along the way of being deeply engaged in it.
Yeah.
But you do get to a point where you've kind of worked as hard as you can on that thing. And you need to turn your attention elsewhere. And so back to the humanizing work theme, right? If work is going to give us a place to express our humanness, we probably can't settle for the 4 hours a month automated business. And this is why successful serial entrepreneurs, even after a big exit, go on and start something else, not because they need the money,
right?
Because they need to do meaningful work.
They need to do meaningful work, and in that state with this person I was talking to, she was not growing. And so that theme of growth is there as well, that if I'm not growing, I'm not interested anymore. It's not meaningful work for me if I'm not growing personally. And so she needed to find something where she could grow, where she could work out something new, something different. Do you find yourself getting bored with projects or types of work?
I know there's good and bad expressions of that in my life, where I get bored when the work becomes routine, but sometimes that means finishing, right? So I'm really interested in the novelty and the growth, and then we get to a point where I could stop before I have the impact that I need to have. And so sometimes I need to push through that and just do the hard work to finish something. Other times it's a signal that I've kind of maximize the impact I could have on that thing and need to move on to something else.
I think this is where collaboration comes in as well, because different people have different preferences of starting and finishing, and more creative exploration versus I love to have the checklist and knock things off the list. There are preferences involved there, and a great team often has a mix of those preferences on it, so that the people that are great and love starting and have a lot of energy around that can start things, and then they can rely on the help. Not necessarily that you hand it off to the other person and say, I started it, now you finish it for me. But to say, can you hold me accountable? Can you help me get through the end?
And bring the energy to that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Right. Where, as both of us, people who enjoy starting and experimentation, I think we can bring fresh ideas to a team.
Yeah.
And we need someone else that can keep us engaged and focused on the finish line with it. And not a handoff, but collaboration throughout, where we each bring our best self to that.
It strikes me that this is very related to the research around engagement. Right? We've talked a little bit about that in other episodes, about the importance of engagement and the factors that lead to engagement. I like the summary by Doshi and McGregor, probably best of all the summaries, but they all have pros and cons. But their summary talks about purpose, play, and potential. When we are doing meaningful work, when we are engaged, it's at our growth edge, all those things are engaged there, right? So I think there's a direct link between this, do we want to do easy or meaningful work? Well, what we want to do is do engaging work. And engaging work has the aspects that it is making an impact for somebody. It has the themes that we talk about in humanizing work as characteristics of that.
So if somebody wants to make this more true of their work, right, they want the right kind of ease and meaning, in their work. I said, what do I do tomorrow?
Yeah.
What advice would you give them?
I thought of the advice I wouldn't give people first.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of Tim Ferriss's podcast and his show. I think he has some really interesting thinkers on there. I have heard some people giving recommendations about, in fact, a story that comes to mind from that space of where there was a software developer who outsourced his job, his tasks, offshore.
Not just peripheral things, like his core job.
Like his core job, he offshored it because he could get somebody through Upwork or one of these services to do it for a small percentage of his salary, and he essentially went on vacation for months at a time and wasn't discovered for months at a time. That's not what we're talking about. That's probably all the way at the end of the spectrum between ease and meaning, right? It was he opted for full ease, right? And that's not what we were talking about. So I know that there are people that give that type of advice, is try to figure out how to have as little investment, as little time spent for the most financial benefit. Mm-hmm. That's really not what we're talking about here.
And I don't think that's actually what Tim would say.
No, and Tim wouldn't either, right?
He's constantly dealing with that from the 4-Hour Workweek book name.
Right, right.
Like most things, important marketing choice and a difficult legacy to the book title, right? So what advice would I give? Well, if I go back to have those core factors, right? How do I have purpose in the work? How do I have meaning in the work? I would look to who is impacted by my work. And I would look to trying to figure out how I can have some kind of conversation, some kind of insight into the impact it does have. I'll say that one of my favorite teams that I worked with used to, in their industry, once a month, a person on that team would go out and be an intern. Not for their company. They would go out and intern with the customers that they served. And they were literally interns. So that day they would show up. Exactly. They would show up and say, oh, you need me to take out the trash? Okay. You need me to go and shine this table over here? Okay. And through doing that, number one, they're being of service to their actual customers. But you pick up things in a different way when you're not interviewing, when you're not actively asking questions, when the customer didn't feel like they were kind of on stage and had to answer the questions the right way. They were just being an intern, and they heard conversations that they didn't expect, and they really learned how their product was used and learned opportunities for how it could be used. That was just one of my favorite examples of really connecting to the people that were trying to help, trying to impact. What advice would you give?
The advice I often give teams is focus better. Mm. Slice things smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're, you mentioned stakes a couple times when you were talking about examples of this.
Yeah.
You have to believe your work matters.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I see individuals and teams working on big things that are not equally meaningful within the big thing.
Yeah.
And so you can go for a long time feeling like you're just plodding away towards a really large goal, but not having a sense that everything matters.
Mm, yeah.
And I noticed that the teams that experience more of this sense of flow and ease and meaning all at the same time are working on really small slices of value. And it's like every day we did something that mattered. We had an impact today, rather than over the next several months, we're doing a bunch of stuff and eventually it should be good.
Yeah. It reminds me of, I learned something recently that the word priority, which is a big word in the Agile community, mm-hmm. prioritizing and doing the highest priority work first. Priority was not used as a plural word until the last 100 years. Prior to that, priority was the one thing. If you think prior, right, a priori, first.
What's before the others?
Exactly. What's the one thing you're going to do that matters, right? And I think that helps as well with focus, is really if you only got to do one thing, what thing would make the biggest difference? And I think individuals can use this when they're waking up in the morning and figuring out, what do I want to get done today? It's really easy to get sucked into email, get sucked into whatever the calendar says. But the importance of taking some time at the beginning of a day or at the end of a day, depending on people's energy curves, right? And saying, what would be meaningful to get done tomorrow? And it may be directly associated with my job, with my work. It may be that that meaningful thing might be outside of that context. It might be something with a friend or a family member. And if you got that done that day, you feel like, you know what? I made a difference for somebody today.
Yeah, that's so fragile. I've noticed in my own life that it's so easy to go to email or social media first thing in the morning and try to get that dopamine hit of something interesting or fun or rewarding.
Just novel, right?
Yeah. And I go through periods where I'm good about having my journal closer to my bed than my phone. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I'm doing is writing about what's important today. Yeah. What do I value? Uh-huh. And I notice the whole day changes. And even knowing that, and even as somebody who would recommend that to other people, it's still so sticky to go for the phone. And I'm thinking about this morning, my journal was downstairs, my phone was next to my bed, and first thing I did was check email. And you're not going to find the meaningful thing to focus on in your inbox, most likely. That's other people's meaningful things.
Right.
that's probably not yours. I'm also thinking about teams we work with. When we see a whole team engaged and we see the energy that comes from collaboration around a meaningful thing, it's a thing.
Meaning?
A priority. We have these 10 priorities. We're all working on our own things separately, and they're vaguely related. I notice teams have shared goals. And not just like we're all changing the world together in this large vague way, but today we're accomplishing something together.
So this also reminds me, I guess this is my etymology episode, right? Because we had priority as with the etymology that I'm also going to bring the word focus in. So the word focus is a literal Latin word. The word focus in Latin means the domestic hearth. The fireplace at the center of a Roman home was called the focus. That's where that word comes from. And I found that fascinating when I learned that.
How does that connect with this?
So here's how that connects, is that what is the hearth, what does the fireplace do in a home in ancient Rome? Well, it's the thing that attracts people together in the evening. They come together around it. It gives them warmth. It gives them light. They cook around it. So their sustenance even comes from the focus. And if we think of when a team is trying to focus, that feels like effortful, like, oh, I got to exclude all other things, versus what attracts us together? What brings us together? And now we can collaborate, meaning labor together. Right? Now we can, etymology left and right on this episode, but now we can labor together around the thing that is attracting us to it, right? That is where I get excited about, you know, meaningful work as a team. That's what collaboration means to me. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. As you were describing the hearth in the center of the home and like the heat and light coming from it, the image that immediately came to mind was a group of people sitting around a conference table or a living room on their phones. And like the individual light coming off the phone, lighting their face, was like the modern opposite of that.
It is. It is that. And I think the modern equivalent of that is the campfire, because the campfire does that at a campsite as well.
Yeah.
It's a little bit chilly. And so what do? We huddle around the fire. And what else happens around the fire? We have cool discussions. We tell stories. We sing songs. We roast marshmallows or whatever we're eating, right? So I think a campfire is probably a better modern analogy for what the focus actually meant.
Yeah, you literally see that at our Humanizing Work event in June.
Yeah.
Once we moved it from the city to the mountains, you see people gather around the fire pit and share their stories and kind of brings them together rather than scattering to all these different focuses,
foci.
I don't know. So teams need focus.
They do.
They need a thing to contribute to, and there needs to be something at stake. And it sounds like it needs to be challenging. It needs to be at their growth edge, was the phrase you used earlier. We can accomplish this, but we can barely accomplish this, like a difficult bike trail or a difficult piece of music.
Yeah, that focus at the growth edge around something that matters. That feels like the magic combination. Like you said, from day to day, that can be fragile. One day we can feel, wow, I'm really on it. This thing's going to be great, and we're in it. And the next day it feels like, now I have all these other things I have to do. And that's where being on a team where we hold each other accountable can be helpful, where different people bring different energy to different parts of a project or an effort can be helpful. But we don't mean to imply, I think, that once you figured out this one simple trick, like the bloggers would say, right, the one simple trick that will make the rest of your life meaningful, it's not that. But it is something that we can use as a reminder, really finding meaningful work that has an impact for somebody at my growth edge where the stakes are high. Like to have that little checklist I think is helpful for me, just to think about what makes work meaningful. It's not about making it easy or automating my job away so that I can go sit on the beach. I actually get tremendously bored if I go sit on the beach for too long. Hopefully this has been helpful to you as well. Reply in the comments if you have some ideas of things that you have found have really helped you create that energy, that meaning in your work from day to day, or anything that seems to be distracting you. And maybe we can have a conversation in the comments about that.
And let us know what else you'd like to hear us talk about around this theme of humanizing work. See you next time.